Welcome to Novo Ed Talks, where we reveal real-world strategies and expert insights from learning and development professionals. In every episode, we chat with practitioners, course designers, learning strategists, and business leads. We hear about their experiences in the learning industry and predictions for the profession and the trends that they're seeing. But before we get started, a little bit about Novo Ed. Founded at Stanford's Social Algorithms Lab in 2012, NovoEd is a people-centric, capability-building platform that combines social and collaborative learning to drive performance readiness at scale. Through cohort-based experiences centered around human interaction, NovoEd taps into collective wisdom, placing each learner at the center of perspective, application, and expertise. Large enterprises such as 3M, GE, Marriott International, and Nestle partner with NovoEd to accelerate their critical initiatives, reconnect teams, and achieve rapid alignment through learning that is felt, experienced, and swiftly transformed into impact. Now, let's meet our guest for today's episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the NovoEd Talks podcast, a space for training trailblazers to get real. My name is Melissa Fisk. I am the producer of the NovoEd Talks podcast, and today I am joined by Teresa Zeller, who is the Global Head of Learning Creation at Merck. Teresa is an agile, passionate, and strategic global leader who creates innovative learning strategies and solutions to inspire and fuel growth for an organization of over 70,000 employees globally. Teresa has been a trusted partner to executives in building work-first capability and delivering excellence through her talented team using forward-thinking approaches. Teresa, it is such a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. Thank you for joining.
Melissa, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I look forward to our time together.
Absolutely. Why don't you start by just kind of introducing yourself, your role, and your company?
Awesome. So as Melissa just said, I have the role of Global Head of Learning Creation at Merck. We're known as MSD outside the United States and Canada. And we're a global healthcare company that for more than 130 years have been inventing for life, bringing medicines and vaccines around the world to really combat our most challenging diseases to save and improve lives. So I have had the pleasure of being in the learning and development space at Merck for, this is my 29th year.
Wow.
And have been a learning professional in a couple of other companies as well. So I have the pleasure of having been in multiple roles in the business, as well as in my current role, which is across the business, really identifying and determining how best to create, build, buy learning solutions to solve our business challenges and opportunities across the globe, across the enterprise.
Wow, that's a huge, huge group there. And who are your learners specifically, and what are some of their biggest challenges?
So our learners are the 70,000 employees and sometimes contractors who operate in over 150 countries for us. We have individuals, and these are folks that discover and develop medicines. So our lab scientists, folks that discover and develop our medicines. They're folks that make, produce, and distribute our medicines in manufacturing lines, et cetera. They're the folks that connect with our customers to help and understand our medicines, our sales force, our marketers, et cetera. And there are shared functions, our finance teams, our HR teams, our IT teams, et cetera. So there's individuals, they're their team leaders, they're multi-team leaders, there's our senior leaders. Those are all of our clients and all of the folks that we work with that are our learners. We are enabled and very pleased that in our overall strategic framework, it's a core value of Merck to invest in the growth, success, and well-being of our people, or I should say, it's one of our strategic priorities. And so what are their challenges as we're looking to invest in them? I think for all of us in learning and development, a core challenge is that the rapid pace at which we need to grow new skills and capabilities, right? So in order to leverage technology that's rapidly changing, tools, et cetera, in this digital age, our folks who are really busy in their day job need to also continue to acquire new skills to and rethink the way they're doing their jobs to continue to provide and create value for the organization, and in fact, to innovate and create novel medicines. Second thing I would say is building new capabilities. So we're continually looking to the future to say, what are the capabilities that are going to help our leaders, our employees to be successful in the future, and how do we get them from here to there? So continuing to upskill, and those can be leadership skills or what we're now calling across the across industries power skills. They could be their functional technical skills. I think another challenge for our learners is prioritizing. There's only so many hours in a day, right? And I think we all in learning and development are seeking to say, how can we help our learners prioritize learning, but it's also prioritizing even in their jobs every day. They're looking at what do I need to focus on that matters most so that I can, in our business, execute across against the strength of the pipeline that we have and bring medicines, vaccines, et cetera, to market for both people and our species, right? Because we have animal health as well. And then I would say, lastly, our learners are facing changing market dynamics, right? So competitors, healthcare environment changes, policy changes. So they're working in a world that's constantly changing with tools and technologies that are constantly changing, with capabilities they constantly need to develop, and oh, by the way, they need to deliver. So I think we probably all face some similar challenges, but those are the ones that I would say are the big ones facing our learners.
Yes, absolutely. And there, and you know, with the just by nature, what some of their work, what they're doing, you know, it almost adds a little bit more pressure to some of these challenges than maybe some of us at other organizations have. How are you approaching some of these challenges at Merck?
We've actually been on a transformational journey. For the last 2 years, we have been really relooking at the way learning happens at Merck, and we've been calling that reimagined learning. And we've really looked to see how we can more effectively scale around the globe, how we can ensure easier access to our learning for all, how we can reduce redundancy and spend, and essentially, how we can get us all on one digital ecosystem, because we know that as we continue to move and as we see trends coming, right, we need to be able to really leverage skill as a currency throughout the organization. The only way we can do that is if we're on an aligned ecosystem and can readily feed data throughout the company. So we've been really working to get ourselves to that approach. So we have essentially three strategic areas that we're focused on. Number one, enabling a learning culture in the organization, which is really building an environment where we can all learn and thrive. And that's truly about accessibility. It's about the building learning as the DNA of the organization and ensuring that our solutions really drive business and employee performance. Second one is really around transforming the learning experience, which is enabling learning that's innovative, integrated, and in the flow of work. And then the third is how we operate, how we simplify our learning model and business model for learning.
Wow. No easy feat there.
Yeah, it has been a journey, and it's probably another couple years in terms of getting all those things really up and running, but we're excited about it. It's giving us new breath, a new model, a new way to work, and hopefully greater benefit to the organization, right? That's the goal.
Absolutely. It's amazing though. It's, you know, people answer that question and are just like, so, oh, matter of fact, this is what we're doing. I'm like, that's a lot of work that you're taking on there. Now, that's excellent. With the rise of remote work and virtual collaboration, how has your approach to learning and development adapted to ensure that employees are equipped with the necessary skills?
So, what's interesting is we're a very distributed workforce to begin with. We're in labs, we're in manufacturing sites, we're in the field, and we're in offices. Probably the one that changed the most was our office workers, right? So for our global functions and for our office workers, that's become a little bit more challenging as we've be, declared to be a hybrid organization. So I would say remote work has exacerbated our challenges in scaling around the globe that we had. It's forced a little bit more thinking about how we are intentional around building culture, how we're intentional around connectivity and collaboration. I would say, though, that our learning solutions had to be pretty scalable regardless, but I will tell you that it has helped the adoption of virtual ILT, of more virtual methods. Before, we were a strong bias for instructor-led in the classroom face-to-face. We're a little bit more able to use other tools like Mural and other kinds of capabilities to drive collaboration virtually. But we are really focused on how we create and drive a learning strategy that's very accessible across the organization. So, a culture that learning is easily accessed and found, a culture where folks can connect to peers, to experts, to gain capability and knowledge that, yesterday that didn't seem like such an important skill, but wow, I'm now really seeing like I have to upskill really quickly in this. How do I do that? So to really put learning in the hands of the learner and let them really drive for their current role as well as for their according to their career aspirations.
Yeah, absolutely. And how does your team identify and address like skills gaps within the organization? Whether that's through these kind of like digital programs or not.
So, as we, so I guess there's a couple ways I can think about that. One, I could talk a little bit about the learning model that we've put in place, or the structure operating model that we've put in place. We have a part of our organization that is just focused 100% on consulting with our clients to really ensure their understanding of the business goals, the gaps that the business is seeing in capability and skill, and where the business is looking to, the business client is looking to drive capability into the future. So there are real point of the spear, if you will, or the leading foot in the dance of identifying what capabilities are really critical. We then have a team that then takes those inputs and says, wow, there's a lot of them across. What are synergistic? Which of those are most critical to our business growth, success, strategy, our talent strategy, et cetera? Do some prioritization. And that's where then my team comes in to say, okay, what's the best, most effective way that we can meet those needs? So that's from a structure way, how we've sorted so that we can be more nimble, we can form more agile teams, we can move more quickly. Of course, there's other partners like my partner in learning engagement, who leads learning engagement, and that's then making sure that whenever we're ready to create something, he's got the technology requirements and the platforms for me to be able to do that, and bring those solutions to life. And then we've got a delivery team really focused on any live or I should say face-to-face or virtual-led learning. So that's like the model part of that. But we're also ensuring and working to build into our learning ways for our learner to assess, where am I? What's my skill level now, so that I'm not traipsing through ground that I may have already I've already built acumen, I've already built proficiency around. Instead, I'm able to really focus in on the things that the business really needs, that I really can see that I have a gap in and I want to close, and I can optimize the time that I do have to turn my attention to develop myself to be really laser focused. So we've been spending a lot of time in experimenting around diagnostics that help us test up. Diagnostics that will allow us on the back end to have good data analytics to say, yes, you really have that. And not just know it, we're really working to move away from just, yes, someone can articulate around it, but they can really demonstrate proficiency and skill. So we're really after skill development, behavior change, proficiency growth. And so really looking at how do we line up the front and back end diagnostics and data so that we can be a lot more focused, and that also helps an individual and the organization understand, if I need a given skill, who's my go-to? Where can I find that skill? If I look across my organization, where do I have gaps? Now, we're not there, we're on this journey, but that's where we've been focusing our attention so that we can put the learner really in charge of driving their own growth and development, guided by what the business is articulating as important.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of leads into my next question too, is how do you currently, you spoke a little bit to it, but do you have any kind of like, how are you currently measuring the effectiveness of programs? And do you use any kind of like core KPIs for that? It's always everyone's favorite question.
Yeah. So we do drive to KPIs, and wherever possible, we use the KPIs that the business uses, because we always find it so much more effective to tie learning to the business strategy. And if the business is already driving against certain KPIs, then let's demonstrate that we're enhancing the growth in that KPI. So, depending on what kind of learning it is, we have four key phases that we assess, based on the goal of the business, based on what we're trying to achieve, what's the right level to measure the learning? There's always the measure the experience and the engagement. Was it easy to learn? Was it was the did we engage the learner? Was the experience relevant? Is it something they'd recommend to their colleagues, et cetera? Then we talk about the actual learning. So did they gain the knowledge that was a gap? Or did we see behavior shift? Did we see them performing a skill differently than they had in the past? Then we look at what's the performance impact. So what happened to the in the business? Are we seeing KPIs shifting? And KPIs can be anything from, when I was leading the manufacturing learning organization, a big KPI we had was to increase our safety profile in, across manufacturing sites to ensure that we were at top tier safety, which obviously is critically important. A core value for us is to ensure that all of our workers return home in the same way that they showed up to work, right? So how do we make sure that we are a very safe place to work? And so that KPI we were able to measure incident reported incidents. So again, really being able to tie, here's the learning, and then look, incident report rates went reportable incidents went down, as an example. So we look for, when our consultants are taking the work in or intaking, one of the very first things they ask for is, what is the business problem we're trying to solve? How will you know when it's solved? How will we be measuring that? And what will you be looking for? And that's how we derive the KPIs. As somebody that's working sort of behind the scenes, if you will, because I'm in the back at learning creation, I get KPIs too. And so my KPIs tend to be around the quality, how many preventable errors that impact the employee and the learner, cycle time, how fast are we producing the learning and getting it out, so days to complete, how well am I keeping my folks capacity planning at what I call fair day's work, so fully loaded to the right level of capacity, not overloaded, so they're developing as well. But also that we're keeping them at capacity and that we're maximizing our talent. And then how engaged is the team, and am I growing my talent? So there are KPIs we have as learning folks, but then there are KPIs that we're driving for the business as well.
I love that though. Thank you so much for sharing the full picture of that, because I think that really helps folks out. And sometimes, you know, organizations have one of those things where they're measuring like the individual's actual like learning journey kind of KPIs, but not tying that potentially to like the organization as well and the people who are creating all of the learning. So that's great. I love that you're doing that. Do you have a specific successful like case study? I know you mentioned a few things in there, but anything else that you could think to kind of discuss that, you know, is a good example of an L&D initiative that significantly impacted employee performance?
Yeah, I'm going to share a couple that that are favorites of mine because they're some places where we're experimenting with a partner, and it for me is helping to take us to the next plateau where I was talking about that looking upfront and diagnostic, and our goal is ultimately to get to a place where we're much more driving adaptive pathway learning pathways, etc. So we've got some really nice examples of where we've taken learning, and you know, whether it be I've got some examples in manufacturing, I've also got some examples we, you know, actually tried it on ourselves in our learning business, where we've been, and even in DEI, where we've leveraged immersive simulations to get folks inside and really having to make decisions. And what has been really exciting about it is they're nuanced decisions. They're not like your obvious decisions. So they're in a scenario, they're confronted with a situation. It can be very visual. In fact, when we did the one for aseptic training, where you've got manufacturing folks needing to go into a clean room and follow sterile procedure, right? They're faced with something happens and you see it live and on the video. And then they have to choose, what am I going to do? Am I going to bend over and pick up that pen? Am I going to let it be? Am I going to, you know, so. And that's true behavior, right? So those decisions are indicative of the behavior that they would take on the job. When we did that, we saw an actual 15 times faster to train than when we had done that in the classroom or with a coach. So what took 3 hours in ILT took 12 minutes. And more importantly, what we saw was that it yielded a significant amount of performance improvement. So, you know, we essentially saw on average 41% performance improvement. And this was with managers taking it, who are coaching the folks, and with individuals taking the training. So those are some ways that we can really measure, you know, does the training matter? It does, because I've got them on the floor more, you know, producing product, because I'm training them more quickly. But I'm also ensuring that they actually learned and were able to rapidly apply from the first time to their best effort. So that's an example, I would say, of where we're really driving some great.
Yeah, that's a great example with great results. So thank you so much for sharing that. Mm-hmm. What role does technology play in your L&D programs? And how do you leverage tools and platforms to enhance them and potentially like overall experience?
So clearly a huge one, especially in that case, because that was a technology-driven simulation, immersive simulation. So we have essentially five learning technology platforms that are dedicated to delivering and measuring our learning solutions. I would say technology plays an invaluable role. My partnership, like we're joined at the hip, my learning engagement lead and I. And really, we've got our learning management system. We've got what I would call our front door, our learning portal, that is the one face of learning for folks to come and be able to access any of our platforms. We've got a reinforcement platform that helps us, once we learn, sort of continue to ensure that folks have the repetition they need to keep that in their mind while they're cementing the learning. We've got some technologies that help us drive learning in the flow of work, so that it's not always come out, but as I'm in work, how do I learn on the job? We've got our content libraries, our ability to curate and refresh and enhance content. And then we've got data and analytics that we're driving off the back, so that we can see how in fact are we running as a business in learning, but also how in fact are we impacting the business and driving performance. So we rely on our technology capability quite a bit. We have a long list of and a roadmap of where we continue to want to drive. And also we have our, in addition to that, I should say we also have the tools that my team uses every day to build learning, right? So we've got our stack of, what are the tools that we're creating learning with, and what partners are we using to ensure that we can really bring the best learning experience to our learners. So yeah, there's a it plays a really big role on both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking forward, just kind of about the industry in general too, over the past 5 years, as L&D has rapidly shifted and evolved with, COVID especially, but what are some key takeaways that you've seen?
So, as I reflect over the trends we see coming, as I reflect on the last 5 years, I mean, some real truisms come to me that I just think, number first and foremost, your ability to drive business outcomes still comes from doing the right analysis up front. Do you really know what the problem is? And we can get really fancy, but the fact of the matter is, if you don't really understand what the problem is, and you don't really understand what's the root cause of that problem and what's going on for the worker, the workplace, and the what is the work itself, you can have the coolest technology learning experience on the planet, you're still not going to drive a business outcome. So I say, regardless of any changes in trends, like that still remains like the critical thing that we've got to stay focused on. So to me, that remains a truism and a key takeaway. Second one is the evolving skill has always been important. You've seen competencies come and go. You've seen lots of things, but I think skill continues and is really showing up in all current trends as being the real currency. And what I like about using the phrase currency is it has to mean the same thing to everyone, which is why data becomes important, which is why common language becomes important. When I call a skill something, somebody else has to call the skill the same thing, because and we have to measure it the same way. So $5 has to be $5 to everybody. It can't be $1 to somebody and $20 to somebody else, right? So we have to look at skill in the same way, and then we can start really having a true overall human capital system where I can be hiring to the same skill and developing to the same skill and looking to promote somebody based on a same skill. So really being able to leverage that as a currency. And we're now seeing that we're going to be able to have the data analytics and the means to be able to drive that in a way that we haven't been able to in the past. So even though we've talked about skills for a long time in learning and development, it's really going to be front and center, which is exciting to me. I think a focus on observable behavior change is a huge key takeaway for me as well. And I say that because as we have gone through COVID, as we have learned the importance of belonging, as we've learned the importance of collaboration, as we've learned the importance of what culture means in an organization and helping people really build relational skills, the only way to really ensure that you're continuing to build those capabilities across is to see behaviors change. And when you see behaviors change, you know that you're driving it to a capability and you're driving to a performance in an organization. So that focus remains critical. And then for me and my team is fit for purpose. We keep the mantra is, ensuring that we're doing the most good with the least cost and the right sized learning solutions. So we're taking the least amount of time to do the most good. And scalability has probably been the biggest trend for us to be able to reach everybody. So those are some takeaways that we are anchored on.
Absolutely. And that kind of gets into a lot of that gets into my next question too, which is obviously, we just talked about past, future, forward thinking, like what do you see some of those trends being? Obviously, a lot of those things that you just talked about are things we would want to see keep going. Do you have anything to add to that though? What you as something that you would see kind of the future of L&D being?
So I think probably the big one that's on everybody's mind right now that I haven't yet mentioned, I think skill is on everybody's mind and how we address that moving forward. But I think one of the ones I haven't mentioned yet is AI, right? So whole new capability. Everybody's buzzing about AI. And I think as we think about it, there's a couple ways that we really need as a learning as learning practitioners to really wrestle with it. It's number one, what can it do for me in terms of speeding my ability to solve the problems of the business through learning? And so we're already extensively using AI. We are very blessed to have a our own corporate AI ChatGPT platform so that I can experiment and I can it within the walls of the organization. But I can do things like leverage that ChatGPT, and we're using it for learning creation tasks like writing assessments or video scripting or testing new functionalities or any like even in some cases taking the right prompts and building some of our content, which is huge in terms of a savings for our designers and developers. What the what I really want to be able to tackle with AI is translation, which becomes a huge challenge for us operating in 150 countries. I firmly believe that we learn best in our native language or in our primary language. I also firmly believe, and we are standing up a whole capability around what we call localization. I firmly believe that you can build a lot in the center, but every business context, every culture around the globe is a little bit different. And you need to be able to contextualize so that it's relevant to me and I don't just sort of organ rejection go, oh, this doesn't. This, they clearly don't understand what I'm dealing with, or this learning doesn't apply to me because they said this, and don't they know? Right. So, really being able to contextualize in the work, in the business context, in the cultural context, and in the language is really important for learning to be relevant. And I think AI is going to be a game changer there. Now, it's got to develop a little bit, and we're going to have to really work with it, but I believe in the next few months, even 6 or so months, I know we'll have a capability to at least start playing with it in our own GPT in the organization. And I do believe that's going to bring some real changes to how we can bring learning in the organization. So I'm super excited about that.
Absolutely. And I love that tie you put in there. Like, I haven't, obviously AI translation, yes, but with that component you added of like the cultural kind of like understanding that layer to it is really what's going to be like the game changer with it, right? So I think that's fascinating.
Yeah. I think just one more, Melissa, if I could. I think the other big trend we're going to see is, we've got five generations. One of them's going to be retiring quickly. And it's a big generation. And, how do we upskill and not lose that that human capital, that, that intellectual property as folks retire? And how do we scale a generation that's growing up in a very different age? And how do we like bridge the culture? And how do we do that? I think that's gonna be an interesting learning and development challenge, an interesting HR challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Because of just look at how much has changed so much. I mean, even in my lifetime, I feel like I'm the last generation that remembers life before the internet, because we had that a little bit. But like, there's a generation coming up that doesn't know what that is like, and it's wild, Anyway, Teresa, this is my favorite question to ask as a fun send-off. What advice would you give to those just stepping into a leadership role?
So I have to come back to, I think technology, capabilities, all these things are super important. And for a leader, I think the way it all comes together is, being a leader is an awesome responsibility and it's an opportunity to multiply impact that you could never as one person have. But I believe the way you do that is making somebody feel like the connection of how somebody feels when they're with you is what really matters. So investing in your people, thanking them for their hard work and dedication, showing compassion and grace, inspiring, motivating, tackling challenges together, to me, encouraging them to just take time to recharge and take care of what's important to them in life, the support, and being there when you need to be there. Like, if you get this right, then I believe truly you become invaluable to both them and to the organization, and you're going to achieve, in my mind, a more amazing legacy than the projects, the work product that you create. To me, for a leader, that's what you got to get right. So that would be my advice, to get that piece really right.
Absolutely. I love that. And that just made me kind of think too, like as you're talking about, when someone like retires or whatnot, people don't, sure, that they reflect a little bit maybe on like big projects or things they accomplish, but more often than not, they reflect on like a personal anecdotal situation that they had with that person or something special like that. So I think that's just such a beautiful way to end this interview. So thank you so much, Teresa, for your time today. You've shared some wonderful experience with us, and I'm sure our listeners are going to love it. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you to all of our listeners for once again tuning in to the NovoEd Talks podcast.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Melissa.